Welcome to Grant. You're listening to Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. Here are your hosts, Nathan and Felipe.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Jendrick, joined, of course, by Felipe Delgado. Felipe, we are just days away from the opening ceremonies, and of course, the best part of the Olympics, swimming right off the bat. We've got lots to talk about today. We also have in the swim-off one-on-one interview, a great interview with Mark Gangloff, which I think is going to be quite interesting to a lot of people as he discusses his career, trials, and of course his phenomenal swim just a couple of days ago where he leapt up to the sixth fastest 100 breaststroke this year, second fastest American. So, of course, with the swim-off interview, where we take a little more of a conversational approach with our interview subject, I think you will all really enjoy what Mark has to say. Now, Felipe, of course, we've got a few things we want to discuss first, but you know what? I just don't know, after the Olympics, how much, what kind of intro we're going to have that's nearly as exciting, because right now you can kind of feel it. You can kind of get in the motion and feel the excitement. What are we going to do to follow up once the Olympics are over?
Talk about the Olympics and talk about the sex in the Olympic Village.
Well, I think all the athletes seem to enjoy talking about that, which maybe it's just me, but it seems really strange that all of a sudden that was kind of like the secret that nobody talked about, and now it's just everywhere. Like all these like former Olympians are bringing this up. I mean, is it just to grab headlines or what?
I don't know if it's just to grab headlines. I don't know, you know, why this became such a hot topic. I think it's something cool to talk about, maybe to take a little bit, maybe take a little break off of the competition before, you know, it's kind of a calm before the storm, and just bring on a lighter subject. But you know, it's been fun reading all of the athletes and ex-athletes excerpts on what goes on in the Olympic Village, and it kind of gives
a lot of parents are cringing, though. I mean maybe they think it's fun, but I'm sure a lot of parents don't find that to be the most savory of conversation topic that Sports Illustrated wants to run or whoever's running the article.
Yeah, those types of conversations should be left for certain media outlets, not all of them, of course, especially the ones that are exposed, that our younger kids are exposed to. But it does make for an interesting twist on the Olympic Village. And yeah, it's that 18 and over crowd that should be reading that. But who knows? Hopefully that goes away. And with the action coming up pretty soon, it probably will.
Yeah, I think that we've got plenty that we're going to be able to talk about. A couple things that we're going to talk about on the show today have to revolve around, big surprise, Michael Phelps. One of the things we're going to talk about is a tweet that he sent out a few days ago about how he was unhappy with the flags. We're also going to talk later about some commentary made by one Ronda Rousey, a former Olympian in 2004 and 2008, about Michael Phelps. We'll get there when we get there, I guess. we'll start with the conversation about the size of the flags. Now, what we're seeing this Olympics and what Michael tweeted, you can check out his Twitter account to catch the picture if you haven't seen it elsewhere. But what we're seeing is a very small American flag cap on one side and no logo, no American flag on the other side. And the first thing I noticed, Felipe, was Phelps, which is not a very long last name, is bigger than the flag on the cap. What's the deal with that?
You know, it's interesting, and it seems like the governing bodies are taking more of a political interest in uniforms than ever before. And it's you're looking at the cap, and you're looking at what he tweeted out. You see that one side has the American flag, and the other side has the Speedo logo on it. So the question begs, what did Speedo pay for that? What does Speedo pay? What does it cost to remove the American flag from one side of a cap to get corporate exposure on the other side? And
well, I think the most disturbing part of that is the fact that it can be bought.
Well, I think, you know, this is one of my hot topics, and in a year or so, I think people realize why it's such a hot topic for me. But as far as this is concerned, as far as the Speedo logo, it's great that Speedo was able to negotiate the deal. but it's not great because I am almost sure, although I'm not privy to the ins and outs of the deal that was made, what is not so great about this is that the athletes who will be wearing these swim caps will probably not see $1 from this negotiation. And that's what has to change. That's what has to change for our sport to rise, is that our athletes need to be included a little bit more when these negotiations are handled.
Yeah, this whole topic seems to just really mimic what a lot of people say is wrong with NCAA, in that all of this money is being made off the back of athletes who don't profit from it. In NCAA, they can't profit from it. And in the Olympic movement, we have athletes that just don't, because what are they going to do? They're not going to say, oh, well, we won't compete in the Olympics if you don't pay us. It's just it's a rock and a hard place kind of thing. You know, you want to go compete. You want to say it's for your country. You want to be among the best. You want to go for that gold medal. And it's hard to make it, and you don't seem that you're getting any support from other people who are raking in multi-millions of dollars. And it's tough, especially when you look at it as now they're to the point where they're removing the flag from swim caps. I mean, every swimmer is going to be wearing a swim cap. And now you're going to have a flag, a much smaller one, only on one side. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't these Olympic Games used to be about representing your country and not sponsors?
I think that still is the case. But I think now with corporate hands and how much money corporations are bringing in, it seems like there is some leverage in the negotiations when negotiating these types of deals. And it seems like the money talks, as is the old saying. And that, I mean, I couldn't think of any other reason as to why the American swim caps would have a small American cap on one side and a Speedo logo on the other. We need 3 or 4 hours for this conversation as far as what my feelings are about corporations and their participation in the sport. It's not being done correctly. We do not have a professional league in swimming, and it makes it really hard when that money does not break the top. And that's been the case, and that hopefully will not continue to be the case, where the money needs to break the top. The money needs to get down to the athletes. If you're going to negotiate on behalf of the athletes that will be wearing your colors, you need to include them in these negotiations. And to do that, we need to have some sort of players/swimmers union who protects the athletes, who protect the swimmers from these types of negotiations and from not being paid on these types of negotiations. Again, we don't have a professional league. So, unfortunately, we don't have a players union or a swimmers union, but we do need to have some sort of union to represent athletes so that these types of negotiations are also included in these types of negotiations are the swimmers that will be participating.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's too much separation between the haves and the have-nots, in this case, is what we can call them. It used to be everyone's competing for Team USA, or whatever country you're from. You're competing for your team. Now it seems like, well, the athletes are out there under the banner of competing for their country and trying to represent the best their country has to offer. But now it's like the people at top are willing to sell off a little bit of that to appease some sponsors or corporations. Now, I'd love to say that we're reading far too much into this tweet, and they have a really logical explanation for why they're going to minimize the representation of the country of these athletes. But I just don't think that's the case. It really amazes me that this logo, and if you guys check out the picture, if the listeners check out the picture, like I said, check out Michael Phelps' Twitter account, and you'll be able to find it. The logo on the opposite side, the Speedo logo, is no bigger than the Speedo logo that's been on caps for years in the Olympic Games. It seems the difference is they had to remove the cap so that they could move the logo to a better spot for what we can assume would be the TV cameras. And there, to me, Felipe, there's nothing right about this at all. I don't care how much a company could have paid for it.
Well, if it's going to be done and the corporations are willing to put money into the sport, I'm all for it. Simply because it can only benefit our athletes. But the problem that exists...
But should everything have a price? That's the question. Should patriotism, in this case, have a price?
Well, look at it this way. If it involves corporate dollars that potentially could spill over into the off-Olympic years and make it more lucrative for the athletes who participate in the sport, then I believe that it's not all bad. Yes, keeping one flag and minimizing the size of the flags, I have an idea as to why that took place. I mean, it has to do with the organizing committees limiting the flag size on the cap to a certain size, just like they do with logos. But putting a corporate sponsor on the side, on the other side of the cap for TV deals and for revenue purposes, if the athletes are not included, it just seems like a deal that's not including all sides, and that has to stop. And unless people like Michael Phelps and unless people like Ryan Lochte speak up on it, it's never going to stop. So I can't say it enough, and I'll say it to whoever is willing to listen, that these types of negotiations have to include eligible athletes moving forward. If they don't, that money continues to concentrate at the top, and I have never known a governing body that is good at distributing money equally.
All right. Well, the problem that I see with this, Felipe, is that we're losing, I think, by increasing the corporate exposure of the Olympics. Now, I know people will argue that for years now, the Olympics have been sold out, that the corporations have taken over the Olympics. And I'm not going to argue that. I think there's good parts to what's been happening, and there's a lot of bad parts. But this Olympiad, 2012, going into London, I've never seen such a blatant display of corporate greed around the Olympic Games. And I have no problem arguing that point with anybody. I realize that money has to be made or there's no Olympic Games in the first place in the modern age. I understand that. But I don't think everything should have a price. And what we're doing by increasing these sponsorships to such proportion that it's finally to the point of taking away from the patriotism of the games, what we're running into, it looks like to me, is that we're essentially making these a glorified world championships. What we have for the Olympics, or used to, was like this patriotic patina that surrounded the competition. Now we're slowly losing that, increasing the sponsorship, the sponsor recognition, and what does that give us? That gives us a world championships, because we know how the athletes have to wear those bibs until the camera passes behind the blocks and all sorts of nasty grams that they get if they were to think about doing something different. And yeah, the world championships are great, but they're not on the level of the Olympic Games. And I really think that we run the risk of taking away some of the value, some of the credibility amongst the general public of the Olympic Games when we just keep selling more advertising space now when it's at the cost of the flags under which the athletes compete.
Yeah, I do agree with you to an extent, but I also have to think about the best interests of the sport and the best interests of the athletes that represent the sport. And I keep coming back to it. This is the biggest exposure that this sport gets every 4 years. We have the Olympic Games. So it allows our athletes to be showcased. It allows Michael Phelps to jump to the front pages. It allows Ryan Lochte to grace covers of magazines, as well as, you know, Natalie Coughlin and Jason Lezak and some of the best-known U.S. swimmers will jump to front pages. And then, unfortunately, after the Olympic year, we go back to the you know, other pages of the periodicals. But I think it's, you know, if it is able to generate an income, it needs to be distributed correctly. If you're going to have swimmers, and you mentioned the World Championships earlier, if you're going to have swimmers marching out with bibs on their chest with brands that you and I have never heard of, and those brands are benefiting from Michael Phelps or some of the other top named athletes wearing, who's making that money? It's not Michael Phelps, and it's not some of the other athletes that wear that brand. It's the organizing committee. It's the governing bodies. But that money needs to be distributed. I mean, look at what the NBA, you know, announced this week or just this past week about now allowing patches on the uniforms moving forward. They have tentatively put a number of revenue coming in from those patches of $100 million a year. Do you know what that – I mean, now, you're talking NBA numbers, but do you know what additional revenue, additional income could mean to swimming if USA Swimming would allow the same thing? USA Swimming would.
Well, and that part I understand. The issue that I run into is, as I said a few moments ago, there are certain things that I don't think should be for sale. And I think the one place where athletes represent their country's flag, I don't think that should be for sale. But even if that were to be, even if I were on the side that agreed with that and deemed it acceptable, the problem that I have, Felipe, I think is exactly an issue you have, is that it's happening now and the wrong people are making the money. And the issue is that they know that and they're okay with that. If this had been done with the athletes in mind, then again, this is one of the things I don't think should happen. But if something like this were to be done with the athletes in mind right from the get-go, then I think you realize that there's a partnership there and everybody wants everyone to succeed. Instead, that's not what we're getting, and you have to wonder how much worse is it going to get, because right now there's the athletes aren't getting a cut, and there's no signs that in the near future the athlete will get a cut. So how much worse does it get before it gets better?
Well, I think that's where people, we're in the position now where we have enough press and we have enough media attention that the athletes who do get the most attention should get together and say, wait a second, enough is enough. Yes, we are getting taken care of as far as the top athletes go. But for the good of the sport, the other echelon or the athletes that come in with us or right behind us also need to get taken care of so they can continue swimming past their college years. The only way you're going to be able to do that is to have some sort of athlete representation at the negotiating table when these deals are negotiated. To now, it's been closed doors, and there's been a huge stink made about this, how much executives at USA Swimming get paid, how much this and that. It doesn't matter. Let them get paid what they get paid. As long as the revenues are distributed equally, let them get paid what they get paid. But you need to have athlete representation at these negotiations, because ultimately the athletes are who's giving the exposure to these corporations.
I agree. There's a lot that needs to be done, and it's a long topic. Like you said, we need hours to go over it, but that's something to think about. Of course, listeners, if you've got some ideas on this and you want to share your comments, by all means, chime in. I'm sure we'll be coming back to this many, many times, particularly as the Olympics go on, wind down, and afterward when we start seeing athletes who have struck gold, so to speak, figuratively and literally start collecting sponsorships. And I think when we get certain high-powered athletes who retire after the Olympic Games, that's really their opportunity to step up and represent their fellow athletes, and I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. Now, the next thing we're going to talk about before we get to our swim-off one-on-one with Mark Engloff is some interesting comments. Again, as mentioned earlier, made by one Ronda Rousey. She is a 25-year-old judo athlete. She competed in 2004 and 2008. In 2008 in Beijing, she won a bronze medal. Judo, for those who don't know, judo offers two bronze medals per event, and she was a bronze medalist in her weight class. And I believe she was the first American to win a medal for in women's judo for however long it has been a sport. So she's certainly a great athlete. I know she's, I believe, in Strikeforce right now, and I think she's like a top-ranked fighter, and so all-around butt kicker, and that's great. But what got her press as of late, and it seems to be interesting, I think Tyler Clary was another athlete who did the same thing, but she brings up Michael Phelps. Next thing you know, headlines on Yahoo, ESPN, what have you. So what she said was that she did not think that Michael Phelps was very personable. She said he was antisocial at gatherings after the Olympics, at parties, while everybody else was getting together, that he needed his own place, his own area, even apparently when the athletes went to the Oprah show. She blasted him a bit for needing, I guess, his own entourage or whatever she called it, and his own area. You know, we talked a little earlier about the secrets or things that might need to stay secret about the Olympic team and what happens and whatnot. And to me, this just seems kind of like, airing a personal grudge. And I don't know that this was something that on the eve of the Olympics, really needed to be said.
You know, it's just one of these things where you can't judge a man until you walked in his shoes. Like we talked about a little before we went on air, you know, I've seen it. Michael Phelps can't take 3 or 4 steps in a pool deck without being stopped. So, yeah, he does need some sort of assistance when he's on the pool deck. He does need assistance when he's out in the general public. And in these situations as well, whether they are Olympians or other high-level athletes, yes, in some cases, he does need some sort of assistance because he is an athlete that amongst us, you know, Rondon, I'm sorry to say this, he's done things that no one in our generation may ever do again. So we are dealing with somebody who is athletically at least extremely gifted, and in some cases some people will, you know, enjoy stopping him, saying hi to him, and maybe asking him for an autograph. But until you've walked in his shoes and until you've had to do this day in and day out for many years, you don't know when enough is enough. Now, she also went on to say, and these are, I mean, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to attack Michael Phelps because he has an entourage or because he needs to have a separate area, don't attack the sport of swimming. Because, unfortunately, yes, your sport does not get the coverage that our sport gets during the Olympic Games. I understand that, and you might be upset about that, but going out of your way to saying you're just a swimmer, get over yourself, well, I think she has a little bit more grudge than just with Michael. She might have grudge because she feels the sport of swimming is getting more coverage than she gets or her sports or whatever it is. But, you know, I don't want to give too much attention to this. I think it's just an athlete trying to get a few minutes of fame, and this will ultimately and hopefully they just go by the wayside, and she'll continue to do her sport, and Michael will continue to win gold medals.
Well, what I thought was interesting is, you know, she is a tremendous athlete. Like I said, she gets press in her own sport, at least. Obviously, it's not to the level of Michael Phelps, but she's an Olympic medalist, 2-time Olympian, and obviously she's in a sport where there's not very many. I mean, it's your weight class. That's your shot. It's not like you can, okay, well, if your 200 fly didn't work out, let's try the 200 free. I mean, you know, she's in a tough sport. I give her credit for that. She's strike force, you know, think, like I said, the number one, you know, ranked pound-for-pound fighter. She's certainly a tremendous athlete. And that's why I thought this was just kind of poor form. She doesn't need the attention, but yet that seems kind of what this was aiming for. And it's possible she just said it offhanded and it just became this big deal as the media tends to make it. But, you know, I hung out with Michael in 2004 in Athens at a club called Akrotiri, you know, after all the events were over. And there was, you know, Olympians everywhere, of course, and there were certain sectioned off VIP areas, and one was for swimmers. And there was Michael and some other athletes, myself and my wife and quite a few other people. And we were sitting there having conversation, whatnot, and there were, you know, and, you know, we're just having a good time. And I don't know if that's one of the particular things that she's talking about is being separated. But I mean, he did need that. The guy couldn't walk straight to the bathroom, which was, you know, 30 yards just outside the little entryway to the VIP, simply because everybody wanted to stop and talk to him. You know, Ronda Rousey's quoted as saying she felt like he was treating other people as groupies instead of teammates. You know, she felt like that the NBA guys were a bigger deal, and, you know, the NBA guys were hanging out with them, but Michael couldn't. Well, you know, I'm just stating fact here. I'm not necessarily defending anyone, but Michael was getting more attention than the NBA guys, which is just the fact. The NBA guys would get the occasional person walk up, shake hands, take a picture, no big deal. But with Michael, it was like swarms of people that came around him and tried to – I'm not saying they didn't try to keep him from where he's going, but they all wanted to say, hey, congratulations, you're doing things nobody else has ever done. People recognize the greatness. They see the NBA constantly. They know how great those guys are. And then here you have Michael Phelps, who's doing something – nobody else has ever done. So, you know, I'm not going to say that this was at all an ego thing for Michael. Like you pointed out, some people do need a bit of an entourage or people to walk around with them to help them get where they're going. And it's not because they're conceited. It's not because they've got an ego. Hey, the guy just wants to be able to live his life. And sometimes, you know, when you're getting stopped every 5 seconds, sometimes, you know, you have to be able to enjoy yourself. You know, you have to go hang out in the VIP section or whatnot. I don't think you can blame a guy, particularly when he won at that Olympic Games. That was 2004. You know, he won 6 gold medals. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and You know, and again, I mean, if he has to take extra steps to have a good time, if he has to take extra steps to feel he's secure in whatever, wherever he's at, then so be it. And Rhonda, you know, it seems like, again, it seems like she's, maybe she was just venting, maybe she was just letting out a little steam, who knows. But ultimately, it's like, if you're going to take Michael down, that's fine, but, you know, keep the sport out of it. I mean, just be a class act, and like you said earlier, she's a great, you know, athlete in her own discipline, and with these comments, it just kind of brings her down a notch, just because, I mean, who knows why.
Well, and it's not just that, but I'm going to read you a quote from her that I think might kind of fire up swim fans everywhere.
I know. So, I know where you're going with this.
this is her quote. "I don't like being somebody's teammate and being treated like I'm a groupie. I didn't even want to go out of my way to say hello to that guy. Get over yourself. All you do is swim. Mm-hmm. If someone slapped you every time you jumped in the pool, I might have a little respect, but I was a swimmer before I did this stuff." End quote. And from what I believe her coach said, she competed at Junior Olympics in swimming.
Now she's categorizing herself with the 12-year-olds that I have going to Junior Olympics this year.
Yeah, so apparently her experience as a JO swimmer classifies her with the experience to know what it's like to put on the training regimen to ultimately, up to this point, win 14 Olympic gold medals and 16 medals total. Felipe, I don't know, but I think that might be stretching her expertise just a little.
I think she may have been slapped in the head once too many times.
I don't know how you can tell a guy who's the greatest Olympian of all time, all you do is swim.
Yeah. I just think she might have been slapped in the head a few times, and she justifies this by saying, if someone slapped you every time you jumped in the pool, I would have a little bit more respect. I'm sorry, but from now on, this is what we should do, Nathan. The officials should actually stand behind us with a bat, and if we don't get off the blocks fast enough, they should be able to whack us, and that would make us better athletes.
Hey, what, your coaches don't do that drill?
Well,
I got nailed in the back of the head a bunch of times.
Well, they do, but they just don't like to do it when the cameras are on.
Right.
And I know that would be that.
Yeah, that would be a whole other issue that I guess U.S. swimming doesn't need. But.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So no, but that I thought was kind of, I thought it was poor form, like we said. I mean, we can wrap that up.
Okay, next. On that.
Yeah. So anyway, on to happier topics, we're going to move on to our swim-off one-on-one interview. It's a great I had a great few minutes. In fact, it turned into be quite a bit longer conversation, which was just fantastic, with Mark Gangloff. I think he's one of the more personable people in the sport, but I also think he's one of the best role models. So I was really excited to get the opportunity to talk to Mark about his preparation for the Olympic trials, what happened at Olympic trials, and his great swim just this last weekend. So without further ado, I welcome Mark Gangloff, two-time Olympic gold medalist, to the show. Mark, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Well, Mark, first off, the important stuff. You're already a proud father, but it's going to be changing now from child to children pretty soon. Tell us how life's going for you and your family as you and your wife, Ashley, are expecting another little one.
You know, like you said, one of my favorite things is being a father and being able to, you know, take care of my kid, Annabelle. And she's wonderful right now. I can't tell you how many tea parties I'm having. It's kind of crazy. But we are expecting another little girl on the way. So I see more of that in my future, and I couldn't be happier about it.
Do you already have a name picked out?
You know, we're working through the name list, whittling things down, but we're not set on one yet.
All right. Now, what's the due date?
November 9th.
Very cool. That's exciting. And like I say, babies are way cooler than swimming, so I want to start the show off right.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, congratulations to you and Ashley. That's fantastic. Although two girls, I don't know. Were you ever worried about having girls instead of boys? And now that you're going to have two, is that like double the worry?
I'm not worried about necessarily having girls. It's just I don't know if I'll ever even the teams out. I'm putting myself behind the eight ball right now.
There you go. Well, you know, at least between you and Ashley and the girls, you'll officially have a relay.
Exactly.
So I mean, you're getting set up. Are you and Ashley planning on any more children after this, or not thought that far forward yet?
You know, we've got to take them one at a time. That's all we can do.
Absolutely. Well, that's a good plan. So, all right, Mark. We're a few days away from the Olympics now. Trials are still fresh in everybody's minds, even though we're a couple weeks out. So I want to go through this kind of in a linear fashion with you, because there's so much to talk about and lots has gone on. Trials in itself, Omaha, second time around, 2008, it got the honors again in 2012. Now that you've got your daughter, you've got your next daughter on the way, how was it preparing for the 2012 trials while you're also preparing to have a growing family?
You know, I think as you get older, you can handle stuff much, much better. You can kind of organize your time, prioritize your time, make sure you're maximizing your opportunities. So I felt like my preparation for the swimming aspect was great. I set up a really great plan with Brett Hawk, my coach, and I think we did a great job executing that plan all the way into trials, and I felt like my preparation was excellent.
Good. Now, was it exciting for you to have your daughter there and be able to watch you swim? I know for my wife, Megan, and I, that was a big thing, that our son, even though only 8 months old, it's going to be great to be able to say, hey, you saw Mom swim at Olympic trials. Was that something that you thought about?
Yeah, you know, my daughter's been to a few smaller swim meets and things like that, maybe the Grand Prix meet in Missouri. So it's exciting to have her there. But I tell you what, those fireworks on the deck didn't do us any good because she wasn't having it. She wanted to stay in the concourse and see the animals and this, that, and the other. She was very afraid of the fire.
Oh, no.
But, it was good to have her there, and I especially needed her there after my final swim.
Right, right. Well, before we talk about your swims, I want to talk a little bit about being in Omaha itself. You've obviously been to trials in Long Beach and now Omaha twice. What was your impression of Omaha, not just hosting, but getting to host it twice in a row as compared to moving from spot to spot in the past?
For me, I from a swimmer's perspective, and I think about this as my preparation, it was much easier to prepare for Omaha because I knew what to expect being there 4 years earlier. It kind of had a visual idea of what it was going to look like. So when you started kind of either thinking about your race or your race preparation, it was more familiar than having it be a completely new place to have to go. I think that, I think you then miss out on having something new there as well. So, overall, you can't really beat being in the middle of a huge arena like that with a bunch of swimming fans around you.
Right. Now, we talked about it on the show in the past, the idea of a permanent host site for big swim meets and Olympic trials, obviously. Omaha would be the first contender. From an athlete perspective and somebody who's been to Olympic trials in various locations, what are your thoughts? Do you think it would be a good thing for the sport to have a permanent site, or do you think we should get back to having a new location every 4 years?
I don't think it should necessarily be new every 4 years, but I don't think it should necessarily just be one place either. I like that it was here in Omaha for a couple years, and if they find a better place to put it in, then maybe we could try that out as well. But I don't think it necessarily has to be there for, 20 years. Two or three times in a row is fine with me, though.
Right. Well, now let's talk about leading into trials. Now, up to the meet, before you competed, you've already mentioned that you felt you had a plan with your coach, Brett Hawk. You felt you executed that plan well. Now, compared to previous trials runs in 2004 in Long Beach and 2008 in Omaha, how did this preparation compare? Did you do things differently, or did you just figure if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
We didn't change a whole lot. I think that we were just a little bit more meticulous about the plan and what we wanted to try and accomplish. We basically set out. I mean, my plan for the Olympic trials started about 18 months before the games or the trials actually happened. Brett and I sat down and said, all right, what are we going to do to have you be your most ready for Omaha and then for London? And so we set up an 18-month plan. We worked through the World Championships, and then basically we had a really big, long training cycle from the World Championships all the way to the Olympic trials.
Now, this is something special going in, and this, I don't know if it affected your preparation at all on the swimming standpoint, but it was a pretty unique scenario in that your sponsor was Swim Outlet. Now, that was kind of unique, I think, being you're their first athlete, and that was the first athlete kind of deal overall for a vendor that sells a variety of different types of apparel. Can you tell us how that came about?
Well, I'm going to tell a story back in 2009. 2009 was obviously the suit era, and everybody on the pool deck was looking for the best suit. And I can remember that panic, trying to, you know, having to try and pick and choose from what is the best suit for me to wear, what fits the best, trying on different sizes, this, that, and the other. And at that moment, it kind of dawned on me, like, when you represent only one company, you're locked into whatever that one product is. And you don't have a choice on what you get to wear. So sponsoring working with Swim Outlet is a perfect mixture because I get to choose exactly the best equipment for me, and I get to, you know, feel comfortable in what I'm wearing and confident.
Now, for the fans who can't remember from suit, obviously for guys it's not quite as easy, being as you don't have the big logo on chest. What suit did you choose to wear at Olympic trials?
At the Olympic trials, I wore a Mizuno suit.
Okay, that's a little bit out of the realm, I think, that most people would expect. What made you pick that suit?
It was just, I like a high-waisted suit, and that one came up pretty high on my waist and kind of locks me in, and I've used it a couple times in the past. But I also tried out a couple other suits prior to that to figure out what I wanted.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Being locked into a suit for a lot of people in 2009 was really kind of the death knell on their opportunities of making the big teams, particularly at that Nationals, being the selection for for two big championship teams. That's certainly something that was a benefit to you at this Olympic trials. Do you think that's something that we're going to see more of, or do you feel that Swim Outlet just really thought that that you were the guy specifically that they were looking for, being that you've had so much success and you're very popular with the fans and very personable? Or do you think that this is something that they're going to expand out to other athletes as well?
You know, I think that that's yet to be seen. I mean, I think if Swim Outlet is happy with the way things have gone, and kind of because I'm also doing some product reviews on their website for their blog, and there's just, I think that overall they're happy with the way it's going so far, and I think it's just, you know, more athletes want to engage in this type of thing, and I think that Swim Outlet will be very happy with the results.
All right. That's something that we've talked about on the show, is finding somebody who's a big player in the sport and being able to provide opportunities for swimmers. I think it's fantastic what you've been able to do as a partner with them, and I don't think that they could have picked a better person. I think you're fantastic for being their first athlete out and giving them the feedback and the exposure that they're looking for. So I do hope that we can see those kind of deals expand going forward.
I think now, it's important. I'm sorry, I just got you off, but I think it's important too, just to kind of think outside of the box for what the normal protocol is. You have to try and find out new ideas and new ways to try and expand opportunities for swimmers. You know, there's not a ton of traditional sponsorship opportunities out there for us. And so when I work with Swim Outlet, it's unique in the sense that nobody's really done this before.
Right, and I think at the same time, it also puts a little pressure on manufacturers to kind of step up their game, because they don't necessarily have the opportunity to just count on the athletes. They can't say, well, we have these athletes, they have to wear our stuff no matter how good or how bad it is. Instead, if we start seeing an expansion of the deals that you have with Swim Outlet, manufacturers are going to be like, well, okay, this is different now. We really have to make sure that we're really focusing on the best product, because the best athletes in the world can easily choose somebody else, and it's not against a contract. They're happy to do it. In fact, the company that's sponsoring them, in this case Swim Outlet for you, is happy to send you another suit. So I really think that we're going to see perhaps even an increase in the level of service that these manufacturers are having to provide, just to make sure that they stay on top of the game and get that exposure that they're really craving.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see that expand. I'm really excited about that. Again, I don't think that Swim Outlet could have picked a better person, so I'm very happy to see that you were able to get this ball rolling, which I think is going to be something that's remembered going forward as we see more of this. Now, let's move on to trials itself. Let's talk about the racing. How did you feel going through, let's go up to the final. How did you feel when you got to Omaha, got in the water? I know as a lot of athletes have talked about the warm-ups being exceptionally crowded with the number of swimmers, but going through the heats, prelims and semifinals, how did you feel about how things were going for you?
Yeah, things, in my opinion, went really well. On the first day, the first prelim, I swam awfully late. There was a lot of heats of 400s before me. I didn't even go off until about 2:45 in the afternoon for prelims. So, but that race went really well. I was very comfortable and swam actually pretty easy. So that felt really good. And then my semifinal swim, I got in there and I felt even better. You know, I felt really comfortable at 1:02. You know, I was obviously going pretty hard, but it wasn't like I went to the well to get there. So I felt like really comfortable going into the finals. And felt really good in the water as well.
Okay, so now let's fast forward a day. You are poised to make your third Olympic team, having won gold medals in 2004 and 2008. What was your thought process stepping onto the blocks as you warmed up and during that race? How did that feel as compared to those swims that you just said felt easier and then were still very, very fast swims?
In the preparation and the lead up, having been through a couple of trials before, I knew kind of the nerves that would go into the finals race and how I would feel. Kind of that very anxious, almost sick to your stomach feel for 24 hours or so. And so I knew that was going to happen. And I think I did a really good job preparing and kind of calming those emotions down. And actually going into the finals, I felt relatively relaxed. In comparison to other years. When I dove in the water, I had a really great start, broke out, but I think that I was missing just that little bit of connection, that little bit of stroke length that I needed to really have a great swim. And so, as I was swimming along, I dove in, Brendan was a little bit behind me because I had a really good start, but then every stroke I took, I saw him inching up, and then by the 50 wall, he touched ahead of me. And then I coming off the wall, I think I spun out a little bit. I wasn't holding a whole lot of water, and that just killed my speed. And, you know, that's why we compete. Sometimes you have a good one, and sometimes you don't. And that one wasn't my best effort.
Now, a lot of people, as we're going to talk here shortly about another swim that you just had a few days ago, but a lot of people think that when athletes don't have the swim that they were looking for in finals, which admittedly, you know, you didn't, that wasn't the swim that you were there for, they say, well, it must have been the taper. Do you think that the taper was mistimed, or do you feel like that was perfect, it was where it needed to be, and it was just a little, just the race strategy that wasn't quite on at that moment?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say that if I could paint the picture of the way I wanted trials to go again, I'd paint it almost exactly the same. My preparation was basically spot on. I mean, in the warm-up, I couldn't have asked for a better warm-up for my final swim. Brett and I kind of looked at each other and we're like, okay, well, let's go. Let's do it. And then just sometimes when you get into a situation and you don't necessarily do things the same that you would, I should have held my stroke a little bit longer. It just doesn't go as well as you want it to. And that happens to everybody.
Now, I think a lot of, at least in the swimming blogosphere and among journalists, obviously it wasn't the swim that you wanted. And I know it was, you had to be disappointed, but you couldn't really tell by looking at you. The consummate professional, you know, you didn't look upset. You were, you know, signing autographs later on. Tell me, do you remember what you felt after that swim, or can you remember what was going through your mind after you touched the wall and looked at the scoreboard?
I knew prior to the race and the months leading up to the race that no matter what the outcome was, I was going to act in a way that I, you know, see myself being, and that is, you know, just being a professional, like you said. And that's the way I wanted to conduct myself after the race. And I went over, after I touched the wall, I went over and gave my wife a big kiss, and then walked down to the warm down pool. And a lot of people said a lot of really, you know, great things to me after the race was over. And that was really special and, you know, nice for me to hear, because people were just very complimentary and like, great job, this, that, and the other. And it made me feel really blessed to have, you know, kind of all the support around the pool deck. And then, like you said, after I was done with all that stuff, I walked out the doors to meet my wife and the rest of my family. And there was just a sea of kids out there wanting my autograph. And I thought to myself, don't feel bad for the guy that gets to sign autographs after he races. So, you know, while disappointing and wish I was over in preparation for the London Games right now, my career has been pretty good, and so I can't complain too much.
All right. Well, you talk about feeling blessed. I'll tell you, as a swim fan and just as somebody involved with the sport, you know, I appreciate the attitude that you had with that, and I think we're blessed to have you in this sport simply because it's such a great example. I mean, we have so many kids that don't even have goals of going to the Olympics, but they love watching swimming because that's their sport, and I think for them to see somebody like you be able to handle a disappointing race the way you did, I think is incredible, and I think it's going to go a long way for them as people, not just swimmers. So as a swim fan, I just want you to know we appreciate that. Because I think the way you handled yourself certainly is not the way everyone would have handled it. In fact, it wasn't. We saw a lot of people have different reactions after swim. So, again, just as a swim fan, we appreciate that. Now, we're going to move forward a little bit from trials. You know, most athletes, I think, after trials, no matter whether it's they go a best time, whether they final, whether it's third place or last place or whatnot, they take a long break before hopping back in. Now, you not only seem to have stuck with it, but you got right back into competing. And just a few days ago, you competed in the Southeastern LSC Championships. Now, before we talk about the swim itself, which has kind of already made its way around the internet, and I'm sure everyone already knows what I'm talking about, I just have to ask, what made you want to get right back into another meet after Olympic trials?
Well, I mean, there's a few reasons. One of the reasons is, I was in peak shape. I'm still in peak shape. So it would be really disappointing just to be in your peak physical condition and then not show your best effort, knowing that it's within you there. So that certainly drives me to want to go and do a best time. You know, just like little kids can do best times, I want to do best times. And that's why I'm pushed. But also there's a very logical, reason, you know, I'm a professional athlete and I provide for my family by being a fast swimmer. And going to this meet, you know, I wanted to, you know, ensure myself that I was qualified for the elite athlete health insurance, and just to kind of make sure that those things were checked off the list and make sure that my family is still provided for. So, you know, swimming fast for me has, you know, multiple facets.
Right. Well, you certainly had an incredible swim. For perhaps the handful of listeners who don't know exactly what I'm referring to, you went 59.76, which jumped you to the sixth fastest in the world this year and the second fastest American. Obviously, if that was swim at trials, it would have put you very close to the victory and would have put you comfortably on the team. It was just a phenomenal swim. What changed as far as your training or perhaps the taper or whatever you're doing in the water? What changed between trials and now to make that swim happen and be so quick?
Yeah, I mean, earlier on I kind of mentioned that we had a workload basically from World Championships to Olympic Trials. And so after the Olympic Trials, basically what I did is just kept on tapering. When I say tapering, I didn't mean like my volume kept getting lower and lower, but I kept basically at that same level of what my last week taper would be. And I just maintained that because I knew I had such a big workload that, you know, that work's not going to go away. And I'm not going to get out of shape by just continuing on that same paper path. So I just decided that, you know, why not? I'm going to go give this a try, and I'm going to try to give it my best effort because I've had such a big workload, I know I can handle it.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people, of course, and this happens, I think, to a lot of Olympians when they if they go to a meet and don't have the swim of their life, lots of people, I think, speculated that quite a few athletes would be retiring after trials. A few different websites out there and blogs speculated, I think, that you were amongst them and were very surprised to see that you went to this meet. Does it bother you that our sport in general, if you're over the age of, say, 18 and don't have a best time at a nationals or any selection meet, that people automatically assume that you've retired?
Yes and no, because, you know, retirement's a very real thing, and, you know, I've talked about it basically every year since I've been a professional swimmer, talking about retiring the next year with my wife. And that's just something that comes up very frequently in our sport because we're not, you know, super highly paid and this, that, and the other. But I don't get offended by it because it is kind of the nature of the beast. But I think that it's, when I think about swimming, since the Olympic trials has ended, my perspective on it has changed in some ways. It's, you know, we live in, during Olympic years, we live and breathe by what happens at the Olympic trials, but every other year, you know, things, other meets matter too. And I think that we have to remember that even during Olympic year, other meets matter, and it's okay to go fast at other meets too.
Right. Now, after the meet that you swim in the Southeastern LSC Championships, after that swim, I checked out your Facebook. Obviously, you're wildly popular on Facebook. You've got well over 4,000 friends, lots of people commenting. But what I noticed that you had posted early the following morning, you had just wrote three words. You wrote, "Just keep trying." Now, what significance did that have? You didn't elaborate on the race. It was just those three words. You got lots and lots of likes and thumbs up and comments, but what was the significance of posting that to your fans?
For me, it's mostly when I think about talking to young athletes. I do a lot of swim clinics across the country, and one of the most frequent questions I get is, you know, how do you keep working hard at this thing? And I said, you got to believe that eventually you're going to break through. And I've gone under a minute before, but that was back in the suit era, so it was kind of a little bit tainted. You know, someone could always say, and even, you know, I know that those suits helped me go faster. I think that my 59.01, I would have been under a minute, but I don't know exactly what my time would have been. So this was the first real time that I feel like I could, you know, stand up and say, all right, I've gone under a minute in the 100 breaststroke. So I've been knocking on that door basically since 2003 when I went under 101 for the first time. So I've been sitting here for 9 years at 100.00 And I really thought I was a 59 swimmer all these years. And finally that swim came out.
Right. Now you say you felt 59 swimmer and that came out. Do you feel that there's perhaps an even faster 59 swimmer or a 58 swimmer? I mean, what's next for you in your career in swimming?
You know, now it's time for a break for me. You know, I want to take a little vacation with my daughter and my wife. I want to play a little bit of golf. There are a couple of things on my plate. I know I'm going to do a lot of swim clinics this fall. I really enjoy doing those. My future is a little bit unplanned, but I have a couple ideas that I want to go. I mean, to say that anything's definite, I couldn't tell you that. But we have a few plans in mind.
But no U.S. Open or Winter Nationals in your future?
Winter Nationals is more of a possibility than U.S. Open. U.S. Open, I'm not going to go to that. That's going to be when I take my little vacation with my wife and stuff like that. But, you know, I might do a World Cup meet or two in the fall. Maybe swim a couple 50 breaststrokes. and Winter Nationals is, you know, that's a very distinct possibility. It's short course. I always like that meet. So, maybe.
Any chance of you turning over new leaf and adding that 200 breaststroke?
I don't. I grew up being a 200 breaststroker, but I haven't done any 200 breaststroke training, so I would highly doubt that.
Well, I have no doubt that if you suddenly decide you want to add a couple extra laps to your race that and you gave that the focus, that you'd have some amazing swims. Whatever happens, Mark, we're very much looking forward to it. Again, as a swim fan and somebody involved in the sport, we can't thank you enough for your positive attitude and being just being as personable as you are and being the professional that you are in the sport. So thank you very much. We wish you and the family all the best. And again, thank you so much for giving us your time and coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. I hope you all enjoyed our time with Mark there. It has been another great show. We appreciate you all joining us, and we hope that you will tune in again next week for the next edition of Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio.